So then do we?
So yeah, modify the findings of fact to include the information that was just presented for, to support that.
All right, so then I move to modify the findings of fact to add the.
Failure to prepare the.
Prepare the searchable site correctly.
Due to the presence of error, yeah.
There's a motion and a second there. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
We're not here.
Okay.
And then we need to accept that the conclusions of law is written, correct? Or do we have to add?
No, because you added in that.
Right, okay, we added. So we don't.
So that and modifying it to include.
Okay, so then we, I make a motion to modify the conclusions of laws written by the IC to include the additional violation as mentioned by Dr. Housley.
Was that under the same statute or was that another?
32212 as it relates to Art 311-5011. Is that the one you cited?
I believe that's right, 501.
Oh, I thought it was.
C number one.
C, yeah, okay.
So a motion?
Second.
And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Now your consent agreement parts.
Now, is there any historical, is there any prior?
There's no prior disciplinary history.
Okay. So then I would make a motion to offer a consent agreement of 1 year probation and then the 4 hours of CE on medical record keeping and 3 hours of CE of surgical procedure, surgical technique.
Procedure or technique? Or
technique.
Okay.
It's 3 hours?
3 hours.
So 4 medical record keeping, 3 surgical technique?
Yes.
Okay.
And if not signed within 30 days, move to an informal.
Second.
Okay, motion, a second. Roll call.
Dr. Byrne, aye. Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. Janes? No, absent, sorry. Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
And Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Okay, all right. Motion passes. Issue a consent agreement. Okay, moving on to case section 2, number 6, case 24150. Regarding Mark Soderstrom, DVM. Tracy, could you please read the front load?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Before we proceed to the next case, I'd like to make a motion to open a case against DVM Vicki Harris for signing a false sterilization certificate saying that she performed a surgery.
That's verifying they're sterilized. It doesn't mean they sterilized.
Well, the actual way the certificate is signed, it says that they sterilized.
Right.
But also that probably something we should have put into this with the medical falls under medical records. Then he's the premise holder. Likelihood it's a either stamp or computer generated. It's all generated by computer.
I think it's difficult because, like I said, if a veterinarian quits and someone comes back to certificate after they left, who signs it at that point? So it can get really difficult when you start making those kind of things. So usually we sign verification now.
Instead of saying I performed this testifies that I performed the surgery.
Is it worth a?
I didn't hear.
I said like when veterinarians quit a hospital and someone comes back to get something signed, usually the other veterinarian has to sign it for them for whatever reason. So yeah, is it worth a case or is it, hey, you know what, hopefully they're listening to this and say, you need to probably change the wording.
Right.
My thought on it is this, it's not a legal document.
Yeah.
And the problem is the wording of it.
Yes. It says that I
If we think about the purpose of this, it's that this animal was sterilized.
Yes.
It's not who did it.
Yeah.
So people need it for their license or for whatever reason that it was sterilized. So if another doctor signed, it shouldn't read, they should just say this dog was sterilized, not I sterilized.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what we're talking about.
Right.
So yeah, I agree with Dr. Wright. Maybe it's just
a change of the certificate.
Yeah,
hopefully they understand
certificate.
Yeah, because oftentimes they say like, I certify I have performed or examined this animal and found it to be sterile.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that would be perfect.
Because the vet's not here, right? The respondent's not here. Oh, I'm sorry, oh, the respondent, I'm sorry. Yeah, so the information has been relayed.
Okay.
Sorry, my fault.
Thanks.
So then moving on to section two, number six, case 24150 regarding Mark Soderstrom, DVM. Tracy, could you please read the front line?
Yes, case 24150, the complainant is Nicola Deal and the respondent is Mark Soderstrom, DVM. On September 21st, 2023, Moonshine, a 12-year-old female husky mix, was presented to Apple and Yale Hospital for continued wheezing, which had processed to an episode of collapse. The dog had been wheezing since March of 2023 and was progressing without a definitive diagnosis. It was suspected the dog had laryngeal paralysis and was referred to respondent for consultation. On September 22nd, 2023, the dog was presented to respondent for suspected laryngeal paralysis. Respondent examined the dog, treatment options, and euthanasia were discussed at the vet. On September 26, 2023, the dog presented to respondent for articulatory collateralization surgery. The dog was anesthetized. Laryngeal paralysis was confirmed on induction. While preparing for surgery, the dog arrested and could not be resuscitated. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Privacy Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Thank you. I believe we do have the respondent present. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead and state your name for the record.
Mark Soderstrom.
Thank you. You have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
I actually don't have much to address. I think I filled it out pretty clearly in my response letter. I'm here to answer any questions that anybody might have.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. We have our lead on the case. Dr. Wright, did you have any?
No specific questions right now, just kind of more discussion.
Okay. All right. You can go ahead and step back.
Thank you.
And then we do not have the complainant present. All right, Dr. Wright, you're the lead.
Thank you so much. So going through and reading this and looking at everything, this is, again, one of those unfortunate cases. A patient passed away, and the question is, was something done incorrectly, or is this, unfortunately, something that can sometimes happen with anesthesia and certain medications? Beforehand, blood work was done, and everything looked normal there, nothing too exciting. And we have the laryngeal paralysis, a mass to removal if we can do well. But, I mean, nothing that was indicating any major health concerns that would indicate that the patient would pass away. Looking at the medications that were used, we gave the pre-medication, and then when we calculate the dose of propofol, we're on that high end of normal dose of propofol, so that's appropriate. And when you look at propofol in general, if you're giving some of that without a pre-medication, the doses go even higher. So I don't think we've been kind of overdosing on propofol, any issues going on there. I can't say there's not a weird allergic reaction or something that's happening, but I don't see any medical issues. My only question, and this is where I just like a little discussion, anybody's concerned, is just looking at the isoflurane rate after the induction. We gave the propofol at 127, and when we marked the anesthesia, the isoflurane, we're at 5%, and then 15 minutes later, we were down to 4%. So we're on the high end of isoflurane for an appropriately sedated dog that appeared stable under anesthesia. Was that high isoflurane for any length of time an issue? Does anybody have any concerns around there? So that was kind of my only question discussion-wise, but I mean, other than that, and I can't even say that's a problem because sometimes you need that high anesthesia.
Right.
The dial goes up to 5 for a reason, and when people say never go up to that, it's like, well, then you wouldn't put a 5 on there if you couldn't go up to it.
Oh, right.
So it definitely can be appropriate, but for the propofol, for the smooth induction, from what I'm reading here, is 5, and then 15 minutes later, dropping down to 4, appropriate, and then the patient passing away 10 minutes later.
Well, I think if we had a more gradual decline in our parameters, I would be inclined to think that could possibly be a factor, but this was not.
Well, it's possible, and we have the pulse was 130 at the first indication, then it was down to 80, when we were down to 4, and then 10 minutes later, but of course, did we drop to 3, and we just haven't recorded it yet, I don't know. But I just didn't know if anybody else was concerned about that, or if that's just one of those things, because it's just, it's something that stuck out to me, but I don't know if that's an actual violation or problem. I think this, what it looks like, is just an accident, something that unfortunately just happened.
Especially when we look at this patient.
Yeah.
And the fact that this was basically due surgery or youth.
Yes.
Yeah. And it had been a long-standing laryngeal paralysis, yeah, which those guys do have a lot of issues respiratory-wise.
Yes, yeah.
So I could see how this could happen, for sure, without any...
Yeah.
Yeah, at least in my experience with anesthesia on LARPAR cases, I don't like them at all.
For sure.
Even as an emergency, we'll see them and intubate them and get them on a CRI of propofol, and they're really difficult to maintain that way. So you're using large volumes of propofol, and I can imagine under anesthesia that the gas anesthetic, that kind of didn't strike me as odd just because of their, because of what they've got going on. I think that, I don't know, they're like biologically, they're lungs and their system is trying to preserve themselves, that they are more difficult under anesthetic, but that's been my experience, so.
No, I think you're very true. I mean, when you're struggling for almost every single breath, it's gonna raise your cortisol levels.
Right.
So you're gonna be a little stressed out, and you're gonna have some
and
other things you have to
transport.
Yeah,
the lungs.
Right.
And the SpO2 was really good in this. It's not like the SpO2 is dropping. So mainly I wanted to have a discussion around that because it is something I saw, and I wanted to make sure it was in the record that we discussed that. But I mean, as long as no one has any major concerns around there, yeah, I agree. It's an unfortunate situation, but I'd make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
And if I could just add,
sorry,
because of another concern that the complainant had was the charges. And you know, it, there was a question as to how can we be under anesthesia for 30 minutes if we, you know, and then, but it does take a very long time to get an animal ready for a surgery. It, we wish it would go a lot faster, but everything that's involved, from hooking them up to machines, to actually shaving, to surgically prepping, it is a very time-involved process. So in that way, if someone does listen, they understand why those charges may be there. And then the actual drugs that are used to perform CPR and the time used for CPR is not without cost either, so.
One of the hardest things is when you have a patient that passes away, what do you do with the charges?
Right.
Because instinctually, a lot of veterinarians just used to say, don't charge for it just because we felt bad, but in charging for it made you think you were guilty or something. That's a very difficult thing because, again, nothing, this was an unfortunate situation, but yeah, the veterinarian didn't do anything wrong and people need to be compensated. And unfortunately, I mean, on the human side, you're not gonna get out of the bill if the patient passes away.
Yeah.
So, like I said, that is always a difficult, hard conversation, and I understand the client's complaint about that, but yeah, I don't see any kind of violations there, but thank you for bringing that up, too. So I still have my motion. I don't know if we got a second.
Second.
Oh, now we do.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Dismiss. Do we want to do one more? Do we need a bathroom break? Okay.
One more is mine. So
okay. I know. I'm sorry. You're just getting. Okay. So section 2, number 18, case 2553 regarding Alexanne Winsterl, VVM. Tracy, could you please read the front line?
Yes. This is a straightforward case. So 2553, Arizona Veterinary Medical Examining Board is the complainant, and Alexanne Winsterl, DVM, is the respondent. At the October 16, 2024 Arizona Veterinary Medical Examining Board meeting, the board opened an investigation regarding the respondent's conduct as responsible veterinarian for the premises and the care and treatment that was provided to Tiger, a 1.5-year-old male German Shepherd that was presented to Dr. Baxter on April 28, 2024, due to not very weight on the arrangement leg. After reviewing case 24-146 regarding Kelly Baxter DVM, the board expressed concerns with staff with the pet owner when the pet owner called later that evening reporting that the dog was still very sedated from the medication that was administered earlier that day. The board had concerns with the premises policies and procedures with respect to staff oversight and their duty to report communications and concerns from a pet owner to a veterinarian on staff. And this did not go in front of the investigative committee. It was brought straight to you for your review and consideration.
Thank you. And I do believe the respondent is present. Go ahead and step forward. And can you go ahead and state your name, sir?
Dr. Alexander Wainsrow.
Thank you. And counsel?
Danny Cronister on behalf of Dr. Wainsrow.
Okay, very good. And you have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
The concern that was brought up by the board was a concern of documentation of this client reaching back out to our hospital following discharge. In this case, and in all cases where a client has reached out to our hospital, all of our staff are trained to either escalate that complaint to an EBM and or direct that client, if they are concerned, to please come back into the hospital to be assessed by a veterinarian, whether it is a veterinarian that patient has already seen or a veterinarian that is on staff, as we are a 24-hour facility. This client was directed to come back into the hospital if they were concerned. That is also documented in the discharge instructions that are sent home with the client, and that the client leaves our facility within their hand and is reviewed at the time of discharge with that client in person to say, if you are concerned specifically even regarding sedation, we have a specific statement in our discharge instructions that say, if you are concerned, please contact your veterinarian or return to our facility. And so that that expectation is set with our staff that if a client is reaching out to you regarding their pet of any concern, again, whether we've seen that pet or not, if the owner is concerned, to please bring that pet in for evaluation, especially if that is a pet that has been seen by us. The concern in this specific case was documentation in that particular patient's record. Our staff is trained as part of their initial training when they are onboarded, and when I say our staff, I am referring to our client service representatives, I'm referring to our doctor's assistants, I'm referring to our veterinary assistants, technician assistants, as well as our technicians themselves. They are all trained on how to input information into a client's record and how to document that. And so it is not something that we take lightly in terms of documenting that communication with a client. And all of our staff are trained specifically where in the client record to document that communication. We do hold all of our staff accountable to that, and it is actually in their training manual, and it is an exhibit in what has been provided to all of the board of what that training looks like and what that expectation is. We've also, since this incident, have reviewed once again and released and circulated a specific SOP regarding client communication, exactly how, where, and when to put that into client records, and when to involve a veterinarian. And again, that expectation is essentially, if you are concerned, please come in and we will assess your pet.
Thank you. And we are the complainant, so on this case, Dr. Wright, you are the lead.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for being here, and I appreciate the testimony that you gave and the information, and that we're being proactive in trying to handle some of this stuff. But I know we had some questions in regards to a previous case that brought this one up. And because we have those questions, we need to get some clarification. We need to ask a little more. I think it's more appropriate to move this to a informal to ask those questions and seek more information. So I'll make a motion at this time to move this to an informal to seek more information.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Any other discussion? No? Okay. All those in favor to move to informal?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Motion passes. Thank you for being here. And we go ahead and do case 24131. All right, Tracy, could you please read the front load on case 24131 regarding Scott Diskin DVM?
Yes. So this case was brought back to you. I believe you guys had moved it to an informal interview originally. So case 24131, the complainant was Bambi Hartman, the respondent was Scott Diskin DVM. On May 23rd, 2023, Val, an 8-month-old female Great Dane, was presented to respond for a spay procedure. The spay responded noted blood seeping from a lesion on the spleen that he described as a chronic lesion. The bleeding could not be stopped, therefore an emergency splenectomy was performed. The dog recovered but declined and arrested. Respondent resuscitated the dog and noted notified the pet owner that the dog needed to be transferred to an emergency facility for continued care. The dog was picked up and transferred to Animal Medical and Surgical Center. Diagnostics and treatments were performed. It was determined that the dog was actively bleeding in the abdomen, and due to financial constraints, the dog was humanely euthanized. The dog and the spleen were submitted to Midwestern University for a post-mortem evaluation. The pathologist determined that the spleen was bleeding likely due to splenic trauma during the spay procedure. Then when the splenectomy was performed, the splenic artery was not ligated properly, which caused continued bleeding into the abdomen. The pet owner stated she was not notified of the splenectomy until approximately 3 hours after surgery was performed. Additionally, respondent did not disclose that the dog arrested and CPR was performed while in his care. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. It was moved and seconded that the board find ARS 3222-3211, gross negligence, treatment of a patient or practice of veterinary medicine resulting in unnecessary death that was caused by carelessness, negligence, or the disregard of established principles or practices due to not performing a splenectomy correctly by not ligating an artery and vein resulting in the dog bleeding to the point where she required community euthanasia. ARS 3222-3212, as it relates to R311-5011, failing to provide professionally acceptable procedures for not reporting that an ovarian hysterectomy was performed on the dog when it was not. According to the necropsy report, the dog's uterus was not removed, and the motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Thank you. And
I'm going to have his attorney come up.
Oh, yes, thank you. Okay, counsel is present. Go ahead and state your name, sir.
Good morning. My name is Jimmy Noh. I'm here covering for Dave Stowe, who is attorney on this case. And because Mr. Stowe is not available this morning, we ask the board to kindly to move this, continue this matter and move it to the next meeting.
Okay, so a request to continue. Okay.
Madam Chair, point of order. The board at the October meeting unanimously approved that this be moved to informal. So, I mean, that's what's currently on the books. If there was a concern about access to the necropsy report, the respondent was made available at the latest on the 9/10 IC meeting. And that he may have had access to it prior to that. So to me, we still have a motion on the books.
Okay.
And I don't know whether we need any contrary action or we're pending the informal or...
So
there was actually going to be a motion to rescind that motion and offer a consent agreement.
And well, that's kind of my question is why are we postponing this if we've already decided on a consent agreement? I mean, we either move it to an informal or offer consent agreement today.
No, there hasn't. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, not decided, but I mean, we either move to informal so we can discuss it more. Why are we pending it again? I don't understand that.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah, please.
Sure. So, Dr. Diskin did not have access to the necropsy report because he wouldn't have obtained it until it moved to an informal interview. It did get moved to an informal interview, so he was able to review it. Upon review, his attorney approached me and said to resolve this matter more speedily, it makes more sense to offer a consent agreement. And I'm not going to speak for Mr. Stoll, but it sounded like today that he would agree to what the board would find as far as a violation. That is absolutely the fastest way for us to resolve this case is with a consent agreement. There's not really a need for an informal interview when he's already saying he understands that he made this error, if that's going to be what he's saying. So that's why this is here. So anybody can always ask, you know, to to change a process, especially if we want to do it if it's going to be faster.
But wasn't the request just to postpone this one along?
That's where I'm lost.
I'm like, why are we postponing
so,
it again?
So that was a request that was made
today because Dave Stoll is not available.
Yes. So there was a request made. It doesn't mean that you have to move, to accept that request. So do we want to give the complainant an opportunity to speak, or do we just move forward with this consideration on this particular case in this circumstance of if we're going to informal or a consent agreement?
I think that you could do still have the conversation about do you want to offer a consent agreement or not, but I think you want to hear from them.
I mean, you know, we would, if you feel comfortable, perhaps, you know, offering a consent agreement, and then if they have any questions or concerns, they can, you know, ask that it, you know, that be re-agendized so that they can address that with you. You know, I know it's no fun to, you know, move things down, but generally speaking, you know, the first one is always kind of, you know, given for the continuance. I know that previously you moved it to the next step, but as, you know, Victoria just explained, there's additional information in it now, you know, they're taking a different position and want to try to resolve it with you. If you feel comfortable making a motion, I mean, making a, offering a consent agreement and see where it goes, you certainly have that ability to do so today.
My only question is, it sounds like the crux was the necropsy report. Now that we have the necropsy report, we said, yes, we agree. What other information is there? That's where I'm not understanding. It's like, what's the point of postponing this?
We don't know because they didn't articulate.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't, and as Victoria said, we can't speak for them, you know.
I mean, if we're going to postpone it, I'll go to the formal.
But he can
actually make it a real.
They can always decline the consent agreement.
Yeah,
and then argue their case at that. Then
and if they decline it, move it to an informal.
Right,
which is
so we can just do that all in one fell swoop.
Which would again cause the delay, and we lose the month of expediency, supposedly, by offering the CA.
Only if they contest.
You know, I don't think there's anything that, you know, as it plays out, it's certainly not a longer process, as Victoria said, this expedites things.
So we could make a motion to offer consent agreement with whatever we decide.
Yes.
And then if it's not signed within X number of days, remand it to an informal at that point, too.
Yes.
Because because if we're going to decline the consent agreement, then we have questions at that point.
Right. Yes.
So that's probably the best option today, is offer it. We've already seen the necropsy reports. There's no triggering information.
Right.
And if they think there's information, let's go to an informal and present that information.
So you're the lead, Dr. Thompson. What are your thoughts here?
So my thoughts are, I'm going to make a motion to rescind the move to informal from the previous meeting, and then I would like to make a motion to offer a consent agreement.
Okay, so a motion to rescind and then offer a consent agreement.
Correct.
Okay, there's a motion.
Second.
Motion and second. All those in favor, do we need a roll call? No, voice call? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Okay, motion passes.
So the consent agreement, we would accept the proposed facts and findings of law as written by the IC.
Okay.
All right, motion and a second to accept the proposed findings of facts and conclusions of law as written. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
And then because yes, are there any priors?
Yes, there are priors. In 2003, Dr. Diskin was found in violation of failure to follow professionally acceptable procedures. It was alleged that a dog died under anesthesia. He was placed on probation for 1 year with continuing education. And in 2024, he was found in violation of ARS 3222-3212 as it relates to RDRM 5011, failure to provide professionally acceptable procedures. by not calling the pet owner immediately after the pet passed away and not offering a necropsy. He's placed on probation for 1 year in order to do 4 hours of continuing education and ethics and communications. And that's it.
So, Dr. Thompson, before we discuss the consent agreement, I have some things I'd like to discuss that would impact that potentially.
Okay.
The incision. We have a 78-pound dog with a 2-centimeter incisions of variolastrectomy, 3/4 of an inch. So it's impossible, immature dog, Great Dane, to perform a complete ovariohysterectomy through a 3/4 inch incision.
I've seen some amazing stuff at high volume, high quality.
And it turned out that it wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't done. Also, the respondent's narrative states that it would be impossible to assess the OH ligatures, or that he assessed the OH ligatures via a 2-centimeter incision. That's impossible. You can't look at your stumps through a 2-centimeter incision.
Right. So I would say on your first statement, would probably disagree, just knowing what the high volume doctors do, that they actually are able to do an OVH with that. Obviously, he did not complete his OVH, but it is possible to do with that incision. I will agree with you, though. You're not going to be able to go back and properly look at your stumps in that incision site. If you think that there's some bleeding, you definitely have to increase the size of that incision to look at that.
Yeah, you'd have to swab. You'd have to do something else to verify. Yeah. I mean, you can look at it on the outside, of course, before you let it back in.
Right.
Yeah, once it's there,
you're done. You're not going to see it.
And you're not going to really swab in that.
If you
yeah.
Exactly.
Get down in there.
So the respondent's narrative said he extended the incision 10 centimeters. I'm not quite sure that was 2 10-centimeters or 12 total.
Yeah.
Now we have a 12-centimeter incision, according to the respondent, about a 4-inch. It would be very difficult to exteriorize a spleen in a 78-pound dog without trauma. And as we see in the necropsy report, it was multiple traumas to the spleen, probably due to trying to exteriorize it through a 4-inch incision. Then we look at the necropsy. The incision measured by the pathologist at 6 centimeters, and the photo indicates that. Now, we didn't have a 12-centimeter incision. We had a 6-centimeter incision in this dog that had an ovariohysterectomy and a splenectomy, about less than 2.5 inches, was what the actual incision was. And there's no denying that, it's right there.
Right.
As to the spleen, the respondent's narrative states that he believed the spleen was not incised because he had to look for it, and it had chronic lesions. The necropsy indicated the spleen was acutely traumatized with lacerations. The splenectomy errors, it wasn't improperly ligated, it wasn't ligated, and another ligature was loose. So we left a splenic artery bleeding, basically. As to the ovariohysterectomy, the patient did not have an appropriate performed. We had 1.5 centimeters of one horn and 5 of the other left in the dog. That is in no way proper ovariohysterectomy. Okay. As to the care of the dog following the incidents and the bleeding, this patient, he attended to it for several hours, and all that was done was 498 mils of fluids given, that was it. No belly wrap, no colloids, no hematocrit checks, nothing. Communication, this surgery ended at 11:42, and then the respondent had a conversation with the owner at 2:34, almost 3 hours later. So I think before we offer our consent agreement, we need to, I just wanted to look at some of these factors, and this was not, this rises to the level of serious errors made, not just I inadvertently sliced a spleen and tried to take care of it. That's not what happened here. So I wanted to get those on the, those points on the record before we would proceed with the consent agreement.
And I completely agree with you. The only thing that I had the question about was I've seen some insane stuff with spay-neuter doctors.
Yeah.
They're closing up by the time I get my snook hook in there looking for the uterus. I'm like, how is that even possible? Yeah. But yeah, but no, I agree that this was not adequate for this. I agree. Yeah.
So the components of the consent agreement now?
Well, I guess it's open for discussion, right? Like, so I was thinking of probation, but we're currently on probation.
Was that resolved with that case? Is that back to active status?
No, he is currently on probation at this time.
Okay. Just because sometimes when they complete the CE, it's faster. So I guess my question is, in this case, with all the things that we know, and knowing that there was the conversation about moving to a consent agreement to at least move the process forward, mm-hmm. would it be something that, as far as whatever we do propose as a consent agreement, that we give 2 weeks to sign, and if not signed, move to informal? That way it doesn't get delayed another month past December?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no
just that way, then it's on the December agenda. Mm-hmm. If in this case the attorney had asked for possibly to move it down the road, then if the terms that we come up with aren't acceptable, then it does give counsel and the respondent the opportunity. As far as how to move, that's a tough one. This is a
It's difficult because I agree 100% with everything you said, Dr. Housley. This very rarely do we see cases where it's this. I guess I'll be, relying on everybody here to help put this together, because in situations like this, I feel like CE just doesn't quite do it. And I do think that we also have the option of requiring refund of expenses.
Was there a request? Yeah.
If they requested it.
And I agree, and like I said, we are in probation right now. When I look at the previous things in 03, that was a long time ago, but that was professionally acceptable procedures. Mm-hmm. This current one is professionally acceptable procedures. That's also kind of like a broad thing, and I'm not seeing a consistent necessary issue, but I could kind of tie it together with the last current. It's communication, it's there, but it's a whole different issue. I agree. Continuing education in and of itself is probably not enough alone. I'd be looking at abdominal surgery continuing education. We don't have spay neuter specifically. So maybe there is. I don't know.
Well, there are spay procedures. I would imagine.
Like CE courses or.
Yeah.
There's even surgical labs and stuff now.
But for spay neuter or just abdominal mm-hmm. surgeries? Oh, really? For
no, I think so. I think so because of the high volume. There's more labs now for that
I'd like to throw something out there for discussion.
Yeah.
First of all, I would add under the appropriate statute and rule, failure to communicate with the owner that the patient was undergoing a splenectomy and had undergone CPR. So that's 3222, 3212, R311, 511, failure to communicate those to the owner. I would also add 3222, 3212, R311, 511, failure to follow acceptable professional procedures by not providing adequate patient treatment to a patient with abdominal bleeding. So I would add those to the IC recommendation.
So if we add those, do we then need to?
We need a motion.
We need a motion, but then do we need to, because we've already accepted the findings of fact, so then do we rescind that? We just add to it?
We can just add.
Okay. So then make a motion to add, as mentioned by Dr. Housley,
to
Second.
It's almost like two separate procedures that were initiated but not completed.
Correct.
And the second one being on the fly as the surgery happened, they weren't informed about the second surgery, but neither the first nor the second surgery were actually completed correctly.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
We have a second? We need to vote on that.
I'll second adding that.
And a second to add. Do we need a roll call or is voice vote okay?
Voice vote.
Okay. Fine. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
And then my thought on the consent agreement was that the respondent be prohibited from performing ovarian hysterectomies until the following conditions are met. The respondent to find a shelter or another spay and neuter clinic not his own. They will allow him to observe 5 ovarian hysterectomies on dogs greater than 50 pounds. The respondent is to notify the board when a suitable facility has been found. After observing the 5 surgeries, the respondent is to prepare a report and submit it to the board. The report to include the signalement of the patient, of each patient, and a surgical description of each surgery. After the board reviews the report and finds it satisfactory, the surgery restriction will be lifted.
Second.
Now it's just for the spay, or we're worried about the spleen portion. Like that's the thing is like we missed a ligation there, and that's where kind of abdominal surgery in general.
I guess we could let our
CE for that.
We could let our
exactly. So, okay.
CE cover that.
Yeah, okay, okay, cool, okay.
Yeah, and I apologize. I've been trying to look back at the original complaint to see if they had requested it, and I don't see where they requested.
No. The chairman had a question whether
I say, was that changed that was the administrative rule changed that it had to be on the complaint that the board could?
That's in an overarching law. Tracy, do you know if it was in the complaint?
I don't believe it was. Because I have a file for me, usually I'll put an indicator that they have requested reimbursement of fees, but I don't believe that they did.
Yeah, I didn't see it in the complaint itself. I just didn't know if it had to be in the complaint or if that had been.
I think that's the law.
It does have to be in the complaint.
It does have to be in the asked.
So the reason it's not in the complaint is because I didn't know I had to ask you guys for a reimbursement. My understanding was that because his malpractice insurance contacted me 2 days after her death, asking me to put a demand request in, and I told him I wasn't going to do that. Okay. Until all this got cleared up.
Okay.
And then I was also informed that I could take him to a file civil charges against him in court.
Okay.
So that's why I wasn't aware that I could ask you guys to take care of that issue.
Okay. All right. So. Thank you.
Madam Chair, can I ask who's speaking?
I'm sorry, it's Bambi Hartman.
Bambi, the complainant is present. Okay, so it wasn't asked for, but it does sound like there's been efforts made to reach out on that behalf, so.
Well, in because it wasn't requested in the form, and that's kind of what's in the law, I don't know if we can override that just based on testimony, but it sounds like we're already in contact with insurance, malpractice, right. So hopefully things can resolve that. Right.
So along with what Dr. Nosley had said, could we put in a component to attend an abdominal surgery? Wet lab. Yes, but I would like that. Because there's very local ones, not only in Arizona but also the Oquendo somewhere.
I mean that, or is that part of that skill set testing? Is there something that would fall into that? Mm.
That's just a written exam.
Yeah, that's okay. So there's no practical. Okay, yeah. So never mind then.
And so, how many hours are those usually? So. Because I was thinking 6 hours of CE for surgical emergencies. But
they're at least that. Typically, they're a multi-day, but they're at minimum that. But I would ask that it has a lab, a practical component, not just lecture.
So require a
wet lab,
surgical
a
wet
surgical lab,
lab
abdominal surgical lab. Because again, there's multiple, so then it would give the respondent the opportunity to pick the appropriate one for timing and
other. Right, so I guess, but then we have to have some sort of numerical value, right? We can't just say pick a wet lab. So like minimum.
I would say 8 hours.
8 hours.
Because again, they're typically multi-day, so.
And we're, again, currently on probation, so that factors into it too. Okay.
So I would make a motion to add the 8 hours of abdominal CE with wet lab sessions.
Okay. And then
the time frame on that one? For 2 years, probably, for 8 hours, especially with current one you're already.
You're nice.
Oh, you're doing longer than two?
No, I wouldn't do longer than two.
Oh.
No. Within a year.
Oh,
again,
usually for 8 hours, I think a lot of times.
I would say a surgery restriction then until it's done.
Right.
Yeah. Until it's done,
yes.
Correct. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But that doesn't have to last the full 2 years,
yes.
But until it's done, I would think if you finish it
mm-hmm.
in a couple months.
Mm-hmm. For both parts.
For both
yeah.
parts.
For the spay
mm-hmm.
component and the surgery lab component.
Yeah, but I'd give them 2 years since we're already on probation too. Just to kind of
oh, 2 years probation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 2 years probation.
Okay. I thought you had 2 years to get the CE done.
No.
Okay.
Well
you have to have to, you have to finish before the probation
right,
period.
But
yeah.
he's also
yeah.
got to finish before the surgical restriction is
right.
Lifted
yes.
If I understand
yeah.
correctly.
Yeah.
As far as how this is getting put together. Yes.
Tracy, I'm very sorry.
That's okay. Can I just go back and just confirm? You wanted a practice restriction of prohibiting Dr. Diskin from performing spays over 50 pounds and mandating him to go to a shelter or spay neuter clinic to observe five surgical procedures or spay abdominal procedures, write a report to the board, including a signalment and surgical description before his practice restriction can be restored.
The 50.
Also, 8 hour CE of an abdominal wet lab.
Yeah, Tracy, I think it was prohibited from performing any ovarial hysterectomies.
Okay.
And then the observation needs to be on dogs over 50 pounds.
At an approved hospital.
Could it be abdominal surgeries? Can we just update it to abdominal surgeries?
So he could still
the
perform
the surgery.
The five surgeries.
Yeah, no, like do the practice restriction as abdominal surgeries.
Oh, I mean, because the spleen.
Because it's
mm-hmm.
all in there.
Because
with
of
the
spleen
yeah.
part
yeah.
component.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
no problem.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're doing abdominal surgeries as a CE.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, because it's abdominal surgery, so it wouldn't be like your oral surgery
right,
or
right,
your
right.
or your lac repair.
Right.
Or
but
your lump.
Are we doing that until the 8 hours is complete, or just until the observation is completed?
Both parts.
Okay. Okay.
Both parts completed.
Is it a practice restriction for the 2 year probation?
Yeah.
Until completed.
And then you get request the board to lift the probationary.
Right. Because we would have to get proof of the wet lab done, and then also the report from the.
Yeah.
And then, so to clarify, with the shelter or spay neuter clinic, does he have to? So we have to get board approved, and then also, if it's a licensed premises, does he want something from a responsible vet that he's approached them and they agree and have read this order?
Yeah, they would need
yes.
a copy of the
yeah.
order.
Yes.
Okay. What else?
Well, since we don't have the ability to provide a refund, we can do a fine.
You can
right.
do it either way.
Yeah, we can.
Yeah.
Well,
civil penalty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would propose a civil penalty of $1,000.
So $500
per
violation?
Per
violation. Is it per violation or what is it? Is it
I would say
$500
total.
Per violation,
yeah.
So $1,000. Is that correct?
Okay.
Well, it's not per because we added two more, so it would just be
$1,000 total.
So it would be $250 per.
Or
would you
$500 per?
Yes.
I would right. make a motion to make $500 per penalty per violation.
So we had two from
and then can
that's
we
four.
Second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Could we put something in there about CE for medical records and ethics and communication?
Yes.
Because it's all of the things.
For
which,
communication, yeah.
For communication, because we just completed four CEs for ethics and communication. So
When was the date on those completed? Do we have that handy? Sorry if I'm being a pain, Tracy.
Yeah, because this was in May of 23.
Could you repeat that? You want to know what the CE that you said was?
Yeah, when was that, the CE completed? Or when we?
Yeah, this one happened before that case even went, so.
Do you have that information?
Oh, I was looking at the wrong year. Never mind.
Yeah, because it was 2023 that this happened.
Okay, never mind. Then that answers my question.
So would we not want to add that, since that was something
we just did? We just did the hours of,
which were done after this incident had happened. So,
Can I ask, what's the time frame that he needs to have a board approved shelter or spay neuter clinic to you?
I mean, the sooner the better, because he's limited.
He's under the restrictions.
I mean, I would say within 60 days. But again, the restriction is on
So he's going to want to, on his part, he's going to want to expedite
that. I mean, I'd give him 90 days to do it, because it may be hard to find someone to schedule something like this. That's because fine. It's so niche.
Well, you can still, but you can still plan it. But you can still plan it. You don't have to do it within a week. You just have
find
somebody.
But I would give him 90 days to figure it out. And then if in 3 months he hasn't figured it out, it's like, well, you're still not doing surgery, so it'll come back to us and be like, do you not care? It may be hard to kind of find someone to do that potentially. So I would just give them the benefit of the doubt, because this is one of those things where it's going to be on the self-starter of the veterinarian to get it done fast and get back to normal. And if you don't want to, well, cool. So.
Well, and given that his primary job is a spay-neuter clinic, he's going to want to get this done.
So I would give him the benefit of the doubt for 90 days before we have to deal with it and get intervened again. But I would think he'd probably do it a lot faster, probably.
Okay. So then, yes, I'd be okay with the one area, since we just did the others, and we would trust that is a priority.
Okay.
It's all clear.
So, Tracy, how many hours then in that?
So it's 8 hours for
the lab.
Oh, I meant for the was it communication? Because we just did.
I thought we were going to not do that because he just did it for a different case.
Wait, we did communication and medical records.
Did we do ethics and communication in his last?
So then let's do medical records.
Medical records. So 3 hours of medical records.
Sure.
And do we need hours for the critical care treatment? Because we found a violation for not following acceptable procedures for the treating of a patient with abdominal bleeding. So we need hours for critical care.
Okay. So we have 8 hours of CE that are abdominal surgery wet lab, 3 hours of medical record CE, and 3 hours of critical care CE?
Yes.
It's a lot of hours.
It's a lot of hours.
We have 2 years.
2 years of probation.
I mean, what if you did abdominal emergency surgeries?
Get it done.
I mean, I'm fine with like abdominal emergency surgeries, and that would cover everything. That's adding on another 3 hours for critical care. This is a hemoabdomen. That's a surgical complication. It's an emergency, but
we also have a spay-neuter doctor who's not performing correct spay.
Right.
I agree with that. But I just don't know, I mean, additional 3 hours of the critical care portion.
Well, but you have to separate them.
Have to do anything.
Well, we have a surgery, and we've addressed that.
Yeah.
Now, if he was another doctor caring for this patient, the treatment wasn't proper.
Right.
It doesn't matter how we got to the hemo.
Well, we referred to an emergency facility.
Right, but the fact that you had an animal under your care that you
For 3 hours.
I agree, but it's like, we're just adding on hours, just adding hours right now. I mean, is that really needed, in my opinion? I just don't know. I mean,
it's also
like, all right, this was all one procedure.
Well,
surgery address how you handle a hemoabdomen, say from a splenic tumor?
I would hope. an 8-hour course to talk about emergencies. We can vote on whatever, but I'm just like, okay, we're just, I mean, that's a eight, that's
let's vote.
11 hours, that's 14 hours in 2 years.
Yep. You have to get 20 every 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's 34.
It's not very many.
No, it's not very many.
Okay.
Yeah.
But.
So, okay, so let's vote then. Well,
can I ask for clarification? Maybe we don't need it, but for the civil penalty, it's $2,000.
Yes.
Is it just at by the end, or
within the by the to at the end of probation?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay. So roll call on this one. Is that correct? Roll call. All right.
Yeah,
go ahead,
Dr. Byrne. Dr. Byrne, aye. Ms. Frost,
aye.
Dr. Nosley,
aye.
Ms. Solomon,
aye.
Dr. Thompson,
aye.
And Dr. Wright,
aye.
Okay, motion passes to offer the consent agreement. All right, let's take a bathroom break.
Thank you.
Be back at 11:05.
We're going from the top down now, right?
Yeah. Hi.